This is John Batchelor. In tonight's preview, I speak with Tanya Branigan, the author of the new book Red Memory, about the Cultural Revolution of the 20th century in the People's Republic of China, a time of sadism, cruelty, mass murder, and what now is regarded as the cursing of a generation born between, say, 1946 and 1956, who were burdened with the mania of imposing Mao's will on the people of China. It took the form of chaos, anarchy, plundering, abuse, turning on your teachers, turning on your parents. Vast. In the meantime, Mao, consolidating his power among the other Chinese Communist Party, turned on his number one acolyte, Lin Bao, a man who had been a military hero in the revolution, and then turned into a sycophant, Mao's lieutenant, the presumed Mao successor, until Mao turned on Lin Biao, and he fled and died. Here's Tanya Branigan not only explaining the death of Lin under mysterious circumstances, but also how his death put a stop on the Red Guard mania, at least in terms of the people who most believed that Chairman Mao was all-powerful. Praise Chairman Mao. Suddenly, Mao had become an emperor who murders his lieutenants when he feels threatened. Here's Tanya.
Yes, I mean, Lin Biao, I have to say I was fairly flabbergasted to discover a Lin Biao impersonator as well. I mean, there are plenty of Mao impersonators, other key figures like Zhou Enlai and so forth. Lin Biao was much more surprising precisely because he's been vilified for so long as the sort of the greatest enemy of the people, really. Even though he died before the end of the Cultural Revolution, he was actually given a posthumous show trial for his responsibilities for the era. And he had this extraordinary trajectory in which he went from being something of a military hero through to being really Mao's chief sycophant, essentially, the person who was doing the most, or one of the most, to foment the Cultural Revolution, to create this personality cult. It was him who kind of developed the first little red books when he was leading the army. And so he was defense minister, but more than anything, he's really remembered for telling people to follow Mao, lauding Mao, praising him to the skies. Whether he believed all this or it was simply tactical is a very good question. But in any case, even sycophancy really wasn't safe in that era. It was a time that was so unstable and turbulent that only Mao himself could feel secure at that time. And so Lin Biao, who had been so central to Mao's mission in the Cultural Revolution, quite quickly begins and is positioned as his successor and his heir apparent. In a way, although Mao chooses to do that, it also really seals his fate, because quite quickly he falls into Mao's disfavor. One strange thing is that because the only way to advance in that time is to praise Mao to the skies, the very fact of praising Mao then becomes suspect to Mao. So really, whatever you do, you're doomed. And so he falls from favor. It becomes clear that Mao's turning upon him. And he and his wife and his son then try to flee China in a plane in very mysterious circumstances. And the plane crashes, again, in rather mysterious circumstances in Mongolia. Not entirely clear what happened, still remains a mystery. But as I said, he was vilified after his death. When people were finally told about it, which was not for many months, they were told that Chairman Mao had been sort of nurturing really this viper. And it was a critical moment for the Cultural Revolution, because I think people really thought, well, either Chairman Mao has made this sort of terrible mistake, in which case he can't be the great godlike figure that we trusted him to be, or he's just vengeful towards people around him, and he's this sort of emperor dispatching people who've fallen from favor. And also, of course, because Lin Biao had been at the sort of forefront of praising and lauding Mao and the Cultural Revolution, and then suddenly they're told, well, he didn't believe in any of that. So if the person who'd been its chief champion didn't believe in it, then really, why should they? And so this came about halfway through the Cultural Revolution, and it was the point at which really even people who had kept a degree of idealism or belief began to think again.
I'm John Batchelor.